ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of the Dugout Debate Podcast. I'm Tim Hustlebury.
And I'm Chris Kerr.
This week, we're going to be looking into doping in sport. We're going to be looking at the history of doping and some major examples. We're going to be looking at the more recent history of doping. And we're going to look at the future of doping and what is in store for sport across the world.
So, Tim, there was a 2017 documentary film out called Icarus. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Absolutely. Before I get going, spoiler warning, if you want to go watch it and you want to go watch it without any spoilers, do that now. Just go and do it. Don't listen to us, go and do it. It's really, really good. Or you can just skip to about 10 minutes into the podcast and we won't be talking about it anymore. This is your final chance. Okay, right. So although it touches on the Lance Armstrong scandal and his exploits at the beginning, the film centres around the state-backed Russian doping scandal that led to the nation's omission from the Rio Olympics in 2016. So this documentary was created by Brian Fogel, is the journalist's name, and he was indeed the director as well. And he began searching for answers on how easy it is for athletes, particularly in amateur events, to get away with doping. Indeed, he was a keen cyclist himself, and he had taken place in an amateur cycling event known as the Haute Route, and that's considered to be one of the toughest amateur cycling events in the world. In 2015, when he was clean, he finished in 14th place, and he essentially said there were 10 guys who were just so much better than the rest of the pack. They were just untouchable, they were in a class of their own, and I think he was essentially insinuating, are these guys doping? So he thought, okay, so how hard can it be? Through contacts at WADA, he essentially got chatting to people, and they seemed like they would be willing to help him out on his journey to doping glory, if you like. As the film progresses a bit, it's evident that these individuals decide that perhaps it's not best for the longevity of their career that they're going to be helping a guy dope intentionally. So they actually end up pointing him, rather bizarrely, I think, in the direction of a man named Gregory Rodchenkov. Excuse me if I start butchering this surname in a few minutes. He, at the time, was the director of Moscow's anti-doping center. So working with Rodchenkov, Fogel began an intensive doping regime, primarily testosterone, I think, injecting it into the leg. He provided several urine samples to Rodchenkov, and Rodchenkov went to extraordinary lengths to help Fogel, from smuggling dosages of Fogel's urine through Russian airports to sort of helping Fogel with the dosages and that sort of thing. It was at this time when they were filming together, obviously, when they began all the filming, the Russian stuff had not come out yet, but it was during this time that we started to hear of all the allegations surrounding the Russian Sports Federation and their alleged state-backed doping scandal. To cut a long story short, Rodchenkov flew to the USA essentially in search of refuge, because men who were at the heart of the doping scandal and weren't government officials, if you like, started dying. So, you know, I'd get out of there too. And it was with Fogel that he worked to sort of whistleblow the whole thing. How they did it, particularly at Sochi in 2014, because Russia came off with a big haul of medals from that, and how essentially, I think he said 80% of the athletes who got golds were helped by this program. And frankly, it's incredible. He made a very, very poignant comment: nobody can out-cheat us, we're the best cheaters there are, you just can't do it. But as I say, that's only a brief overview. It's definitely worth watching. It is a bit of a mammoth thing. It's about 2 hours, but it's gripping. It certainly is. So please go and give that a watch. Chris, you've watched some of it. What do you think about it?
Yeah, the point that I took out of it most of all was I couldn't quite believe all the allegations he made about it going right to the top with Putin and his sports minister getting involved in it all as well. I couldn't quite get my head around that they were backing this state-run system as well, and they haven't quite had the criticism that they should have had afterwards, and the ramifications that possibly they should have done, since it's only been the people underneath that seem to have got those.
Ironically, this actually goes back to our very last podcast on the bending the knee, where politics and sport are so ridiculously intertwined that it's actually gone way too far. So perhaps people are right that politics and sport shouldn't get involved with one another.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's just crazy that A, they got away with it for so long, and B, that the, probably the most extraordinary thing about it is that the urine samples bottles that are used are meant to be totally uncrackable. You know, once they're sealed and they can never be opened. But clearly the Russians found a way of getting into the bottles and then resealing them.
Yeah.
To replace dirty with urine with clean urine through a complex set of holes in walls, basically, and under cover of night.
They claim that they destroyed 1,400 samples, apparently, which is a hell of a lot to be chucking away if they were to be found, the ones that had incriminating findings in them. And obviously everything was meant to be filmed at this place as well, but maybe they did have shady ways of getting rid of things. I found it really interesting as well that Dick Pound, the founding president of WADA, said...
Fantastic name.
It is, isn't it? he said that these kind of drug scandals affects the credibility and viability of all sports, which is true, because if you're thinking that guys are cheating, then it's almost as if you're watching something that's fixed. You might as well watch WWE or whatever, something that's just been scripted, because you're just watching something that's inevitable and that there's no sort of intrigue in it at all.
I would very happily watch the doped Olympics. Just let's get guys seven legs running the 100 metres. Let's see how fast it's physically possible to go before your body literally falls apart on the track. And then we have the clean one. Okay, fine. Separating one from the other is probably unviable, but that would be quite fun to watch. WWE is quite fun to watch. It's a sad indictment of sort of what's going on at the moment.
Yeah.
I think probably the best idea is just to go over some of the sport in general's most famous examples of doping. Chris, what have you got?
Yes, so I've got the example of Alex Rodriguez from baseball, or A-Rod, as a lot of Americans will know him as. But he is sadly well known for his use of performing-enhancing drugs, not only for his celebrity escapades with J-Lo, etc. But in July 2007, a former outfield and steroid user himself, Jose Canseco, I'm sorry if I'm saying that wrong, but that's another point that it's so rife in baseball that guys are coming out and pointing the finger at each other, which is quite sad. But he said that he was planning to publish another book about Major League Baseball to follow his 2005 bestseller, Juiced, Wild Times, and rampant roid smash hits and how baseball got big. And he said his new book could come out with quite a few allegations about different players, and that included Rodriguez himself. And at the time, Rodriguez denied the accusations of steroid use, and in a 2007 interview with Katie Couric, Rodriguez flatly denied ever having used performance-enhancing drugs. And in February 2009, in an interview with Sports Illustrated, it was reported that Rodriguez had tested positive for... Sorry, not in an interview. It was reported that Rodriguez had tested positive for two anabolic steroids, testosterone and primobolan, if I'm saying that rightly, during his 2003 season playing for the Texas Rangers. And the information had been given as part of a government-sealed report detailing that 104 Major League players out of 1,200 players tested had tested positive for performance enhancers during the 2003 drug survey. That's absolutely crazy numbers.
That's nearly 10% of them.
It is, isn't it?
Oh, that's amazing.
And that survey was approved by the players themselves, but with the promise of anonymity. And the survey was conducted by Major League Baseball themselves to see whether a mandatory drug testing program needed to be brought in, and that clearly showed that it did.
Even with the anonymity, you'd say a lot of them, the guys who were juicing, were still going to lie.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's very much the low end of the estimate.
Yes.
Even though 10% is still crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll go on to a different athlete who, again, has denied intentionally taking drugs, and he's quite infamous in this country specifically, even though he's a US athlete. Of course, I'm talking about Justin Gatlin. Of course, he's a track sprinter who has an enviable list of achievements, including 100 meter gold in the Olympics in Athens in 2004 and the 100 and 200 world champs gold in Helsinki 2005, and of course most recently the 100 meter gold at the 2017 London world champs, where he was booed heavily by the very partisan British crowd.
Yes.
who do not like their drug cheats, quite evidently. He was banned in 2001 when he tested positive for an amphetamine, although this amphetamine was found in his ADD medication, so I think his ban was reduced from 2 years to 1 year in light of those circumstances. So you can say, whilst that athletes with these, I think they're TUEs, aren't they? Therapeutic use exemptions, of course. That probably comes under the list of that. I think there was an agreement that he was to come off his ADD medication before he went into competition. And clearly he didn't in this circumstance. So he was in the wrong, I think we can say.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then in 2006, he was tested positive for testosterone. And again, he denies intentionally doing this. He claims that it was the fault of an aggrieved massage therapist who was going to be fired and obviously somehow learned that they were going to be fired. So used a massage cream that had testosterone in it. And obviously it was absorbed into the skin and resulted in a positive test. He took, I think it was an 8-year ban. This, the only reason it wasn't a lifetime ban was pretty much because he cooperated with the doping authorities in the incident. In this case, I think while he's a repeat offender, it does seem that he may be on the unfortunate side of things. But the consensus from WADA, and this is pretty much throughout all anti-doping agencies, is that if it's found in your system, it's your fault and you will be banned for it. It's not a there can't be a grey area with it, because otherwise everyone comes up with these sort of excuses. And as an athlete, you've got to be so careful about what you put in your body. I mean, even at uni, we were told, look, you have to make sure that what you're taking comes from an approved list on the UK Anti-Doping Agency website. You need to make sure you keep a note of the batch numbers of all the sort of stuff that you're taking, whether it's protein supplements, you know, amino acids, all that sort of thing, just in case you get caught up in some sort of doping debacle. And this is uni level sport. I mean, okay, fine, college sport in the US is major, but for God's sake, I was playing dodgeball. So, you know, if we've got to be careful, then these athletes who have nutritionists and trainers who are solely focused on getting these guys to the peak of physical condition. Anyway, Chris, you take off another one.
Just to go back on that point, I think it is clear that and it's important that people can't say, oh, it was an accident, I didn't know I was taking that in that substance. Otherwise people could try and get away with that every time that they were found guilty. I remember one particularly funny incident was Colo Touré.
I was just about to say,
yeah. Yeah, saying that he'd taken the stuff and something his wife had given him, wasn't it anti-aging, I think?
No, it was weight loss.
Yeah, he said that he'd been given this thing by his wife and didn't realize it had a banned substance in it, but of course that's no excuse at all. And also to pick up on something else you were saying there, I find it unbelievable that Gatland got a reduced sentence just because he was seen to be cooperating with the system.
To be fair, I think 8 years was always intended as a life ban. He would have been mid-20s, I think, early mid-20s, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, the lifetime of a sprinter is probably, they might reach about 32-33, so 8 years from that point is probably it constitutes a life ban. But as we've seen, he has come back and he has actually won stuff.
Yeah, that's another interesting point actually. Do you see a long-term effect from having the drugs, having taken them before? Do you get a kickback from it when you do go back to competing later in your career? Will they still have had an effect for him?
Okay, this is going quite outside my actual field of expertise.
Okay.
But I'd say it's unlikely that Gatlin is still feeling positive effects as a result of any substance he took all the way back then.
Yeah, the only reason I'm saying is that it looks slightly suspicious that he's doing as well as he is now at the age he is, because as you've said, it's normally a short career for a sprinter.
That's true, but at the same point, I think that we're not in a golden age of sprinting anyway at the minute. You know, we had Bolt, we had Gatlin, we had Gay, Asafa Powell, Yoram Blake. They all came out as sort of, you know, within a 5 or 6 year span, but since Bolt burst onto the scene, there haven't really been that many new challenges per se.
Yeah.
So I think that Gatlin is clearly a very talented sprinter anyway, and with the current crop of people out there, he could still cleanly win a 100-meter gold. So we'll go to British athletes. Obviously, you know, we're not the holy nation that we claim that we are. Dwayne Chambers, the British sprinter and European record holder for the 60 metres, received a 2-year ban in 2003 after testing positive for THG, tetrahydrogestrinone, an anabolic steroid. I promise we didn't take three edits of that, and I just picked the best one. The British aren't as clean as we'd like to think. Chris, have you got some more?
Yeah, going back to America, sadly, to switch back to it, I've got an example of Marion Jones, who was actually, throughout her entire athletic career, even in high school, was accused either outright or by implication of taking performance-enhancing drugs. And until 2007, Jones routinely denied in almost every way possible that she hadn't taken them. But finally, in 2007, it did come out in October. On October the 5th, she admitted to lying to federal agents under oath about her use of steroids prior to the 2000 Summer Olympics, pleaded guilty at the US District Court in New York. So that was quite a sad state of affairs that she'd been hiding things for as long as she had and eventually coming out.
Of course, Lance Armstrong, everyone knows who he is, a cyclist who won 7 consecutive Tour de France's, but he was subsequently stripped of the majority of his achievements after admitting to a variety of doping offences, including taking growth hormone, cortisone, erythropoietin, steroids and testosterone. This is probably the most shocking of all of them, to be perfectly honest with you, because he inspired millions and millions, if not billions of people to, you know, get involved with sport in some way or just through his motivational stuff in day-to-day life. And then it all came out. Certainly when I was a kid, even at 6 or 7, I was acutely aware of who he was. It was probably him and Johnny Wilkinson and maybe Michael Owen, the only three people I knew in sport. Even though I didn't follow cycling at all, I still knew about him.
Yeah, I remember those Livestrong yellow bands. They were absolutely everywhere, weren't they?
Everyone had one. Yeah, everyone had one. I had one, I broke it, and I cried. something that I think you brought up with Marion Jones, that she repeatedly denied the accusations against her.
Yeah.
And there is another document on Netflix about Lance Armstrong this time. It's called Stop at Nothing. It's also brilliant. Go and watch it, please. But something that really struck me was when Lance Armstrong was being questioned by federal agents, being questioned by lawyers, etc., etc., the denial of the accusations. It almost seemed like he believed what he was saying. It's almost like he felt that what he was doing wasn't wrong.
Yeah.
And while, okay, you know, there are claims by many that cycling is one of the most prone sports to doping, and indeed the Icarus documentary showed that potentially be quite easy to do it. While that might be the case, I think that he might have rationalised it. If everyone's doing it, so can I, and it doesn't matter because I'm the best anyway. And you know, maybe this is a trait of these athletes who will just stop at nothing to win, and they don't see it as a problem. They just see it as, you know, me or you going to the gym to get better at football or rugby. You know, that might just be how they see it.
Yeah, it's sad that he managed to fool himself like that in believing the stuff that he'd been told by his coaches, clearly. And it was interesting as well, actually, in the Icarus thing, that the guy, Brian Fogel, that was doing all of these tests said, all the drugs in the world wouldn't have made me a Tour de France champion. You needed the natural talent on top of the drugs. So that's what Lance was thinking, to get the level playing field, as you're saying, against all the other guys that he might have thought were drug cheating as well. To just get that level playing field and to win, he had to do it.
100%. I mean, the guys who were on the team with Lance obviously were involved in doping of their own, if you watch the documentary. But I think the consensus is that particular time in the sport was not particularly squeaky clean. But anyway, there are plenty more. I'll just rattle off a couple more, then Chris, you can finish off.
Cool.
Diego Maradona, obviously the Argentinian footballer who's definitely still renowned as one of the greatest players of all time. He has a very well documented struggle with cocaine, which lasted for around 20 years. Indeed, he was banned in 1991 for 15 months for testing positive for cocaine. That was during his time in Napoli. And then he was sent home from the 1994 US World Cup by Argentina for ephedrine use. There is the Chinese swimming team between 1992 and 2000. This sort of flew under the radar for me, but I guess I wasn't really alive for a bit of it, so I think that's fair. China's women's swimming team at the 1992 Olympics and the 94 Rome World Aquatics Championships was quite frankly astonishing. In 92, they took 4 golds, and in 1994 at the World Aquatics Championships, they took 12 of the 16 women's golds for swimming, which that's ridiculous. That's absolutely crazy. And indeed, it came to light that coaches and swimmers have been utilizing anabolic steroids and subsequently withdrew 27 of its members of its Olympic team prior to the Sydney Games in 2000. And one more thing, this is football isn't as clean as you might think either. Although, okay, no players were tested positive for any banned substances or the like. Manchester City were fined £35,000 for infringements relating to anti-doping as they failed anti-doping tests three times in the space of less than 5 months in 2016. And by that, what I actually mean is they failed to cohere to the regulations that are required by the FA and UK anti-doping. By that, they need to inform the FA and when players are going to be taking time off, and as such, players basically missed tests because they weren't at training because Manchester City failed to report the fact that the players wouldn't be at training to all the relevant authorities.
Is that similar to what happened to Rio Ferdinand? Is that right? Where he didn't tell them where he was going to be?
Yeah, it is. It is quite similar to that. Okay, Chris, you got a couple more.
Cool. To move across to the other side of the pond again, a guy called Lyle Alzado, who was probably one of the most famous American football players in the 70s and early 80s. He was a defensive end for the Denver Broncos, Cleveland Browns and Los Angeles Raiders, and absolutely caused havoc on the field during his playing career and was quite an outspoken character as well. But he was one of the first major US sports figures to admit to using anabolic steroids in the last year of his life as he battled against a brain tumour that eventually caused his death. Alzado asserted that his steroid abuse directly led to his fatal illness, which is really sad. But the role that anabolic steroids may have played in Alzado's death has been the subject of controversy. The lymphoma of the brain that took his life has not been associated clinically with steroid use. And the claim was denounced as a myth in the 2008 documentary Bigger, Stronger, Faster, and by Wisconsin pediatrician and steroid expert Norm Fost. Although that makes it no more sad that Lyle Alzado died on May 14th, 1992 at just 43. And he, of course, did admit that he'd taken these steroids to get to the top of the game throughout his career, and whether he had made it without there is, again, another cause of controversy. And something slightly different, moving away from humans and moving to horses.
I love the equine field doping. That's all I get excited about.
Yes. So we had the Godolphin doping scandal in 2014. Actually, 2013 is when it happened, but it carried on over into 2014. But on the 22nd of April 2013, the shock news broke that a major doping scandal was at the heart of horse racing's biggest global thoroughbred operation. The powerful Godolphin team called it a dark day for racing, as 11 of its horses were revealed to have been injected with banned anabolic steroids. And founder Sheikh Mohammed, the ruler of Dubai, was said to be absolutely appalled, and he didn't know anything about it going on, and it was the people under him that had allegedly come up with this scheme. The more positive tests followed as a separate drugs controversy unfolded, and two new market-based trainers were banned for a total of 13 years through doing it. So it's not just in human sports, it is also being used in horse racing, fairly unsurprisingly, because of the amount of money in horse racing.
One more thing. There is an article, just an image I'm going to put on our website. And essentially what it is a list of the fastest ever 100 meter times that humans have done, essentially. So it's a list. I'll quickly go through a few now. And it's quite interesting if you haven't seen or read this before. So obviously Usain Bolt 9:58, Usain Bolt 9:63. This is minute. This is seconds, obviously. Usain Bolt 9:69. Then Tyson Gay, who was found to have doped. I think that's 9:69 as well. Johan Blake, done for doping, 9:69. Tyson Gay, obviously done for doping. Usain Bolt, who's clean. Asafa Powell, done for doping. Asafa Powell, Justin Gatlin, Johan Blake, all done for doping. Justin Gatlin. Three more Usain Bolts, and then the rest are Asafa Powell, Tyson Gay, Johan Blake. So that's a list of, what's that, around about 2025 of the fastest ever 100 meter times, and all athletes bar one, Usain Bolt, have been done at some point for doping. That's pretty shocking. That's horrendous as far as I'm concerned.
It's an interesting question at whether those guys felt like to compete with Usain Bolt, they had to cheat. Because as you were saying before, it's been difficult to find a challenger for Usain Bolt in recent years. It's literally been a one-man show. And maybe they felt that the only way that they were physically going to be able to do anything to compete with him and get those times was to cheat, which is a sad state of affairs.
It does also make you question, has Usain Bolt just been doing really well at getting away with it?
Yes, it's true. He's had that arse throughout his career, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And something that Lance Armstrong said a lot, I've been tested hundreds and hundreds of times and I've never been found. He was guilty. So that's not a stick Usain can use to sort of beat away these accusations.
Yeah, in the documentary, they claim that Lance Armstrong was tested more than 500 times and passed every single one, so that's absolutely crazy.
Yeah. I think actually this brings us on to a quite interesting issue with doping, and that is that whilst there are obviously lots and lots of developments going on in the world of anti-doping and that sort of thing, the way that anti-doping works is that I think it's largely reactive, and I think that's just the nature of it. Athletes are found to have taken banned substances and gotten past all these doping regulations in some form or another, and then are found in the future. This is either because of an innovation in some form of testing standard, or somebody who's done it before, so they then make a protocol by which they can then go and test all the samples that they have from the past, and then they find the athletes who have managed to dope successfully in a particular way, which is pretty sad, I have to say. The fight for a clean sport is essentially, it's always one step behind the dopers.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It is sad that is the way things work at the moment. People that we admire at the moment and glorify for their achievements on the sporting field, it may be that they've been cheats all along, and it's only that we find out much later, once their careers finish, that they get everything taken off them. But obviously that doesn't take away the memories that they've had and the adulation that they've had at the time that they've won it. So they'll get the punishment later on if they have been found out, but it still doesn't stop them from having cheated other people out of winning stuff that they would have done if they had been clean.
So several athletes have received medals years down the lines, and they're like, great, I have this medal that will live with me forever, but I didn't get it when I was supposed to get it. I was cheated out of it. I should have had that glory. Even, you know, if it's a bronze, that's still amazing. I'd kill for a bronze and anything. And these guys were robbed of that by somebody who utilized dirty methods to get their way to the top. In that light, Chris, I think it's appropriate to sort of look at what sports are the most guilty of doping in the past.
Yeah, as we've already touched on, baseball is pretty prominent in. Several players have come forward in recent years to suggest that drug use is rampant in baseball. And David Wells has stated that 25-40% of all major leaguers are juiced. And as I've already mentioned, Jose Canseco stated on 60 Minutes, a very well-known program in America, and in his tell-all book, Juiced, that as many as 80% of players have used steroids, and that he credited steroid use for his entire career himself. So he's speaking from experience, which is sad. But it's not only baseball, as we've also touched on, it's prominent in cycling. It's neither a list of shame nor a list of illegality, but as the first laws were passed in 1965, there's a huge list. You can look on Wikipedia, or that is prominent all over the internet, really, of this list of people that have been found to be drugs cheats since in cycling. I think it's the biggest list of any sport that I managed to find online. And this list contains doping incidents, and those who have tested positive for illegal performance enhancing drugs, or been suspended by the sport's governing body for a failure to submit mandatory drug testing. And in 1963, the Council of Europe gave a definition of doping, which I think is quite useful for us to look at. And doping means to make use of physiological substances in immoderate quantity or abnormal method from healthy people whose only aim is to obtain an artificial increase of the performance during competition.
that's quite interesting, because for things like caffeine, for instance, it's well documented that you get performance enhancement from taking caffeine in whatever sense, but that definitely has an effect. So if some athletes are taking good few green teas before they head on to the athletics track or similar, do they have an unfair advantage over other people? Or is it because it's so easily accessible as a drug, which is what it is, that we just ignore it?
Yeah, I think it is quite ambiguous, that list of substances that are banned and are some that others. It's been looked at before by people that sometimes the drugs that we do accept are legal can have more of an effect on the body than someone on the list. It depends what scientists have deemed to be acceptable or not.
Well, then we also have the even more grey world of therapeutic use exemptions, which, the less said about that, the better. But honestly, I think you just need a cooperative doctor, and for everyone who's not watching this podcast in the world of seeing sound, there were some very inverted commas over the word cooperative there, and other officials just sort of look the wrong way, and then boom, somebody's got some sort of condition that allows them to enhance performance,
yeah,
beyond which that they would be capable otherwise.
To touch on something we spoke about before, I just remembered about Ewan Thomas, actually, that he's come out and said a lot recently about he had to receive his medal from a championships in a car park afterwards, he obviously didn't get any of the adulation at the time. So he's been one person particularly that's come out in the media and said we need to do more to try and catch these drug cheats, and it really does have an effect on all the athletes that compete, because it's completely taken away his moment in the spotlight. He would have got a massive welcome home after the championships locally, maybe even a bus tour, you never know, a gold post box like we saw for the Olympics, and he got none of that.
Sorry, just to jump in, I think it actually goes further than that, because if you look at the world of punditry, particularly in sports of athletics, the guys who you see on the telly, the guys and girls who you see on the telly, are the ones who have succeeded the most in their careers. I mean, particularly on the BBC, we have Michael Johnson, obviously everyone knows about him, Denise Lewis, Paula Radcliffe. These are guys that tore the book apart when it came to athletic performance. And whilst, okay, fine, Ewan Thomas maybe not doing quite the same, if he had got his medal and come back, his career might have taken off after sport.
That's true.
More spectacularly than it ended up doing. So not only are you stealing medals from them, you're actually potentially stealing a future life in media and TV, which is highly lucrative. And whilst athletics, you know, that everyone watches it, it's a particularly poignant example, because if you're a good athlete but not a great one, the money out there is very limited, and you're relying on sort of government funding, depending on where you're from, or lottery funding if you're from the UK. And then winning that one medal could take you into another stratosphere of earning, and opens stuff up for you in the future. I think looking at it from that point of view, just sort of a longevity for any particular athlete who's been cheated out of medals, is an interesting angle to look at.
Yeah, you're right. It's not just at the time, as people have said, it is for their entire lives. They're not going to be known. People might just about hear on the news that someone's been given a medal however many years later, but you'll definitely remember actually watching it on TV and watching the medal ceremony, won't you? And that means that people are going to recognise you in the street. They're going to recognise you enough for you to be able to become a media personality. So it's sad that that ends up taking all of that away as well.
But then again, you might avoid going on Strictly Come Dancing, so there are positives. I think just to finish off, shall we have a little chat about the future for doping, and probably for sport as well? I'd say that most people are aware of doping now, just your casual watcher, particularly with everything that's gone on in athletics, particularly with the Russian scandal and how monumentally that blew up in their face prior to Rio. There were several athletes competing for independent nations, was it?
Yeah.
Who were sort of verified Russian athletes who are allowed to compete, and they really did stick out. Whenever I saw that sort of, it was a sort of grey jersey, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Silvery grey jersey. Every time I saw that, I thought, okay, you've you're one of the lucky ones from the Russian team that might have got away with it, yeah, sort of thing, which is a very sad indictment. And I know that Bolt has very much been carrying the torch for clean athletics, but if God forbid that he was doping, we basically nobody's run quicker than 9.8 ever clean.
It'd almost be the end of athletics, wouldn't it? I mean, he's been their poster boy for so long. And for that, they've been talking about resetting all of the records, haven't they? To make it a little bit more interesting, and also to take away the credit of people that possibly were doping but have got away with it for so long. But if the sport lost someone like Usain Bolt, I'm sure that even Seb Coe with his best speeches wouldn't be able to bring it back.
I think it's also kind of interesting to have a little think about the sports that we don't hear about doping issues in, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I know I mentioned Manchester City earlier, and we spoke about Touré and obviously Ferdinand, that there isn't much sort of going on with doping. Even that Manchester City thing was very much sort of brushed under the carpet. Me saying it to you guys now over this podcast will probably think, oh yeah, that did happen, didn't it? But I just sort of forgot about it because it didn't seem like it was that important.
Yeah.
And with the sports where, you know, baseball is a very technical sport,
yeah,
but still they get benefits from doping. Particularly in a sport like rugby, in a sport like football, where the physical element is great. You're running 10K a match, potentially. Doping is probably something that would be a very good idea, if not for the match itself, in terms of recovery,
yeah,
and getting ready for the next match, particularly at sort of Christmas time in the UK soccer calendar. That's ridiculous. They play sort of 7 or 8 matches in the space of about, what, 3.5-4 weeks?
Yeah.
And, you know, to repeatedly, or actually it's probably less than that, it's probably 2.5-3 weeks, to repeatedly put your body through that and perform at a high level is difficult. And we don't know what's going on behind those notoriously closed doors of football training complexes, but I think it would be negligent of us not to at least raise the question, you know, what's going on here.
Yeah, it was obviously interesting with the Man City thing, that it was a failing on the club's part, and when we're mentioning Rio Ferdinand, that was a failing on the individual. So I think it would take, if it was a football scandal, I think it would take a club to have come up with a scheme to try and get around the rigorous testing, because I think part of the reason why we don't see more of this is that there is rigorous testing. You do get testers coming to your club at random times, so to get away with it is difficult unless you completely come up with something that doesn't show up in any of these tests. And obviously there is the money in football that they could plough into this avenue to try and get round testing, but I don't think that that's something that they'd look into, because another point is that football and rugby are more of team sports. Obviously baseball, as you said, is technical, but largely it's individualistic, like we were talking about cricket in a previous podcast. It's the pitcher against the batsman every single time, and that individual can have a massive impact just with one swing of the bat or one good pitch. The same can happen in football. You can have one good shot that ends up winning you a game, but there's 11 players on the pitch at the same time that are all going to impact on that. So if,
while that's a fair sentiment, I'm not gonna start throwing accusations at clubs or anything,
yeah, of course,
like that. But if we look at the very famous Leicester title winning season, where that was remarkable, you know, tiny wage budget but still managed to topple all the big boys in the Premier League. Amazing.
Yeah.
Great. But okay, the player that everybody remembers from that team, I know Riyad Mahrez ended up winning player of the year, but the player that everyone remembers from that team is N'Golo Kanté.
Yeah.
And the phrase that was always said about him was that he's doing the midfield job of two men.
Yeah.
He's just running so much every game, he's getting in these tackles, he's intercepting and then playing the ball forward. If he was doping, for instance, not that he is, I'm not saying that he is, but hypothetically, if he was, and he was the catalyst for that team, it allowed it to do everything around him, playing on the counter-attack and that sort of thing, then doping can be seen as hugely beneficial in football. And yes, it's a team game, but if you have that one linchpin that is so vital and so important and has these physical attributes that are just so much better than anyone else on the pitch, then yeah, they can run the game and it will completely change it for them. While that's extreme, I think it would, again, it would be negligent just to write it off.
Yeah, that's true.
And yes, it requires a whole club to be doing it, to be major. But if one player is doing it and they're they're awesome. Like, say if Messi was suddenly found that he was doping, not that he is, because, well, not that I'm saying he is, but say he was, the fallout from that could be catastrophic.
Yeah.
Well, Messi's a bad example. Ronaldo, because he's godlike physique.
Yeah, and one other thing I wanted to talk about was, you've already mentioned Dwayne Chambers, but he, during his drugs ban, he actually swapped sports for a little bit, not so successfully, but he ended up playing rugby league for Castleford Tigers for a little bit. They took him on trial, and obviously there is WADA that look at global sports and making sure that sport in general does have the same sort of drug policy, but there is something to be said that people could swap sports while banned and go and play for another sport. I know it's unusual, but it could happen. It's happened with Jermaine Chambers, and I'm sure.
Well, I know Gatlin was looking at moving into the NFL, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
You know, that's the first thing that you've got to sort out
yeah.
for doping. Just, it's got to be a ban from professional sport, full stop.
Yeah, exactly.
Or if you're earning money from it in some way, whether it's prize money or whatever, that's it, full stop. And while being really heavy-handed with these punishments is seen by many as excessive, is there a better way to do it than going, right, if you keep doing, if we're going to be, if everyone's going to be doping, we're going to say nope. If you do it once, you're out, regardless of circumstance. That is heavy-handed, but that's a good enough deterrent for a lot of people, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I think it does need something like that. It needs something where they do start getting more heavy-handed with it, because people, not that they cheat because they think that, oh, the ban isn't so bad. They cheat because they think they can get away with it at the moment. And although testing is getting better, I think that is the key, as we've been talking about already. We are that one step behind all the time. We only find out about a scandal afterwards, really. We don't get to hear about it at the time. So as long as we keep on making sure testing gets better, and there's a hell of a lot of people all over the world all working very hard to make that happen, then sport should be the thing that we love, and not be something that's fake for us all to be watching. Ultimately, people have been cheating forever, but and they will carry on cheating, sadly. We just need to try and get better at catching them, I think.
Yeah, well, that's the golden ticket, but the reality is, you know, there are these people working so hard to do it, but there's only so much you can do, and some people will get away with it, but hopefully we can mitigate it as much as possible. And maybe all this controversy and maybe all these doping allegations will actually make athletes think, right, okay, I want my sport to be clean, and the best way I can do it is by making sure that I'm clean.
Yes, spread the message through your own actions. Amen to that.
100%. Brilliant. Well, that's the end of this week's episode of the Dugout Debate podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening to it. Please go and check out our recommended reading on our website, www.dugoutdebatepodcast.com. And please feel free to leave us a review if you're listening on iTunes. And make sure you follow us on our Twitter and Facebook at @dugout_debate. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Tim.
And we hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. See you next time.
See you later.